CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. What's happening? Yeah, it's Wednesday morning, and we are into the month of February, believe it or not, so no slacking. Got to stop with that Happy New Year stuff, too. We got one of those from somebody yesterday. It's like, yo, you just made it. I think February's the cutoff, right? Has to be. You have to eventually draw a line in the sand. Makes no sense otherwise.
I think January the 10th is. As soon as you get into double figures of the new year, that's it.
Why is my mic so loud and yours is so... Someone fiddles with these settings every day. It's gonna make me an old man. Hey, Mubs.
Hello.
What's happening?
Good.
Yeah, Ben, you love calendar talk, don't you? It's your favorite thing.
No, not really. It's just that you have this utter disbelief that time moves on, and that's what really baffles me the most. I just think, like, Happy New Year. If you don't see someone in the first 10 days of the next year, yeah, we must move on.
Yeah.
We got to keep moving on in life, Gareth.
Yes, agreed.
It's an important thing.
Keep steaming forward. All right, listen. I spent the entire afternoon yesterday replying to emails. And you know what? This is what people call work these days. Now, I got in here yesterday. I mean, I had a busy weekend, so we were kind of in Cape Town and doing a lot of stuff. And I didn't have a chance to reply to most of the emails. So what I did was I thought, I'll get around to it on Monday or Tuesday. And I thought maybe on the plane. Well, that was a terrible idea. On the plane? Terrible idea. Because I was exhausted. So I ended up sleeping on the plane. And then yesterday I thought, it'll only take me about half an hour. Because I like to keep my email up to date. In fact, if you send me an email and you don't get a reply within 48 hours, there's something wrong. Usually I reply to an email within that amount of time. I'm able to do it. Most people are able to do it. There are some people you send emails to, then you never get a reply.
Mm-mm.
But that's discipline, hey, because a lot of emails are quite basic.
Yeah. How good are you?
Depends. It's a priority thing. If I don't think you're important enough, then I don't have to rush. But I feel like... At this stage,
I don't have to rush.
No, I don't.
Straight to the point.
I feel like we should be at the stage where we can just, you know, voice response to emails.
Yes.
I feel like we should be at that stage of technology.
Yeah, good point.
You should be able to just speak into your laptop in a response and then get it over and done with.
Right. Totally agree.
Yeah, how is it that we can have like chat apps and that kind of stuff and it's so easy?
Yeah.
Whereas email, we are still hitting the keyboard.
We should be standard responses, like a couple of them that you can choose from.
Yes.
Thanks so much for your email. I'm too busy to deal with you. With peace and love, yours, Ringo.
No, it's like, just use my buddy's words. You're not a priority, so I'm in no rush. That would be the best.
Yeah, but who are you going to really use that on? I know Mubs will, but who else do you know that would actually send an email like that back?
Well, they haven't had the opportunity so far, so you never know.
Peace and love. Peace and love.
Yeah. Well, I watched a brilliant documentary that Ben gave me to watch yesterday about hypercars after I'd done all these emails.
Did it make you feel really poor at the end?
Oh, man. How much does that...
too much.
How much does that McLaren cost?
Just leave it. Too much.
No, I'm curious. Come on, Ben. Help me out here.
Gareth, everything on that documentary was around $1 million up. The Porsche 918 was the cheapest thing.
Lord.
As hypercars go, the Porsche 918 is probably the cheapest. It's like $960,000 or something.
Sweet Jesus. Incredible though, right? Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, just the power of these cars. They did an interview with old Christian von Koenigsegg, who's the guy who is he's the brains behind the Koenigsegg car, and he pretty much built it from scratch himself. He says he watched a movie when he was a kid.
About some stop motion animation thing, yeah,
right,
from Norway.
About some inventor stroke engineer who fixes bicycles and creates this amazing vehicle out of bicycles. So it shows you when you're a parent, You got to watch what your kids are taking in. If you're a parent and your kids take in like stupid stuff like cartoons, and I'm not talking about smart cartoons, I'm talking about dumb ones. Like I've seen some of the stuff that my nephew watches and it's rubbish. Absolute rubbish. I mean, not to say that I watched anything better. But you see this Koenigsegg guy and you think, wow, he saw that movie. And if he hadn't seen that movie, he probably wouldn't have wanted to build his own car one day. Did that strike you?
Yeah, I thought that was just so – because you watch the movie, it's very basic. But a kid's imagination and a little bit of belief and no one saying to him, no, you must get a real job.
Yeah, and then he went ahead and he built his own little factory, and it's an old Swedish Air Force base, and just an amazing story. So, you know, I am not a motorhead at all. I don't know a lot about cars, but man, this was fun to watch. Just to kind of get the feel for how these hypercars are created. And did they eventually determine what a hypercar is in terms of definition?
It's just
basically over $1 million.
There's various definitions to it. Basically, yeah. It's like the top of what science, technology, innovation can produce a car with.
Right.
So it's just ridiculous design. If there was anything better, it would be the next hypercar. There isn't anything better. There's hypercars and there's Formula One cars. That's where the technology is on the scale of things.
So what have we got? We've got the McLaren. We've got the Ferrari's LaFerrari.
Yeah.
We've got the Koenigsegg 1-to-1. We've got the...
Well, the Porsche 918 was...
Porsche 918.
Quite something, because obviously the whole electric hybrid thing, which is what like the really great hypercars are.
Yeah.
You can do that. You're quite something.
Fantastic.
But the documentary, if you want to know, is called Apex, the Story of the Hypercar.
Wow.
It's a couple of years old now, but the cars are still relevant because they literally did as the cars were released.
I got to tell you, I love it. So there we go. Reignited my deep-seated need. And I do have a deep-seated need to be extremely rich one day so that I can buy one of these. Mubs, even if it's just – like the one guy said when they were talking about – obviously the Bugatti Veyron is the other one. So they were talking about this Bugatti Veyron. So the guys who make it, they're standing outside this French chateau, which you could see was built like last year. But it's built in the old style.
Yeah.
And the guy says, yes, we have very expensive cars. And the other guy goes, this is not someone's – nobody buys a Veyron as their second or their 10th or their 15th car. They buy it as their 100th car. And it's usually something that they will park when they're about to hop onto the jet. And that's one of the few times.
Yeah, it's like somebody owns a car like this, has a boat, has a yacht, has a jet.
My God, wow. Wow, wow, wow. Anyway, so that was my little obsession yesterday. We'll get to the news just now. We'll talk about Harry Nell, who's made an interesting move to AfriForum.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, that's it. There we go. All right, let's shut down the show. I've kind of run out.
All right.
Just
okay.
Ran out of stuff. All right, sorry, guys.
It's going to happen eventually, I guess.
That was a good innings. That's fine.
A guy came around yesterday. He didn't want me to talk about this, but I have to talk about it. There was an artist. His name is Bonga. I'm not going to give you any more details because he didn't want me to. And Bonga came here. He and his wife and his kid hopped on a bus from the Eastern Cape and came up to Johannesburg to bring me a painting he'd done of me. A portrait. And I'd never met the guy before. He emailed and said he met me once, and I didn't remember. He met me once at the Nelson Mandela Foundation, and he said, you know, you spent a bit of time with me, and none of the other people who were there really asked me anything or spoke to me for any extended period of time. And he just said, I thought it was very humble of you, and I'd like to give you this gift. So I said, sure. And then he told me he had to catch buses all the way from the Eastern Cape. And I said to him, look, don't worry. Rather bring it when you've got other things to do in Joburg. He said, I don't have other things to do in Joburg. There's never a reason for me to be up there. I don't do business there. If I don't make this trip, you're never going to get your painting. So I said to him, well, you know what? Then maybe I'll come to the Eastern Cape. He said, no. Came here yesterday morning, brought this enormous portrait, which is probably, I don't know, it's the size of size of your average window. And I couldn't believe this guy. He wouldn't take money. Refused to take money. He wouldn't let me post a picture of it because he doesn't want publicity for it. Just one of those very rare, genuine human beings who wanted to do something for another human being and wants nothing in return.
Very rare.
Unbelievable, huh?
Oh, that's rare.
I actually don't...
I don't know how to respond to him.
I didn't know you
him.
Still found people like that,
yeah,
actually.
I didn't know what to say to him. I wasn't sure how to react. Anyway, I just, I've got to say that it gave me some restored faith in humanity. Good morning. You're live on Skype this morning. Who am I talking to?
Hello, Garrett. It's Nobile.
Hey, Nobile. How are you?
I'm well, man. And yourself, guys?
Good. Excellent. Why Nobile is on the line is he sent me an email. He met up with some social justice warriors and had a conversation with them the other day. So first of all, these were two ladies, and you didn't try to get laid. So you suspended...
Well, no. I was trying to get laid.
Okay. So explain to me what happened to everybody else, because you ended up getting nothing, but you had an interesting conversation and an interesting discussion with these ladies about their position on certain social justice issues.
Yeah. So trying to get laid, and then I was with my friend, by the way, because you never go out hunting alone, you know. It's just pathetic. Well, anyways...
At least if you fail, anyway, then you can always go out and drink together.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the whole point. So my friend, who's very homophobic at that time, was mentioning remarks about gay guys. Yeah. The ladies obviously, you know, felt offended for the gay guys. Mm-hmm. And then they started chastising them, like, how dare you, you know? Why would you hate gay people, et cetera, you know, the whole rhetoric. So he tried to play it down because, you know, that's not the whole point. But I couldn't, you know, devil's advocate always creeps up on me. So I was like, no, this is the reason why gay rights or any other, you know, victim group, whether it be racial or gender inequalities, will never really prosper is because of what you guys are doing, which is, you're shutting down the people who should display hate. Like, we should not be doing that at all. We should actually be giving them the platform. If they say, if a person is homophobic, let them express their views. Because if they do express their views, then you understand where they are. This is before they start gay bashing anyone and being hateful to people and start exerting violence. And that's the problem that I was basically telling this woman. They just couldn't comprehend it, though. Like, no, it's so logical that you should be, it's morally incorrect to do that. And it just didn't click. And that what blew my mind is that they just don't understand that if you shut down someone, what they're going to do is they're going to go and keep quiet. And I'm speaking about the moderate people, the moderate ones who are not so extreme. They will go around and find people just like them. And then they all discuss together. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, you got violence against gay people. Or you get violence against black people or white people, whatever the case may be, because you do not allow them the space to express their views, whereby then you can counter argument them and say, listen, this is how your logic is flawed, but you need to do it in a tactful way. Like, you can't just tell someone that, no, you're wrong. You need to understand them in a psychological sense. Like, you need to get behind them and their mindset and actually try to click with them. You pander to them. But what I've seen these ladies is it's always enforcing, like, no, you're wrong. This is how it is. And then they will make logical arguments here and there. But at the end of the day, the person will shut down and be like, I don't care. So what? You're saying I'm wrong. I think I'm right.
You know, it kind of reminds me of what my mother used to say to me when I was a kid. She's like, you have two ears and one mouth, so you should listen twice as much as you talk. But it's right, it's right, huh?
Yeah. And that's this is the first time I experienced social justice warriors up front who are very vocal about it. I would say at the end of the day, perhaps they understood, but they still disagreed. It's just unfortunate that the method that you use, it's pretty clear from the time from inception, from all these activist movements, in my point of view, it has never really worked. There hasn't been much gain. And even themselves, they acknowledge that there isn't much gain
in
this. You
see, some people think they've won just because the opposition are quiet.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, even unwelcome and potentially very nasty and offensive things need to be said. In fact, you don't know that you live in a free society unless you hear things that you don't want to hear. That's the only way you know for sure that you are in a free society. You know, we could build, like in the 1950s, the US and the Russians built these fake towns that they would then blow up atom bombs in. And in these fake towns, they would have mannequins of people and everything was happy and they'd have fresh flowers and they would look after it like a real town, but it didn't have real people in it. And then they'd blow it up, obviously. And what they'd do that for is to go and see what the damage was to, you know, household utensils, fridges, beds, cots, all the different stuff that we all have in our houses. But the people weren't real. Now, if you find yourself walking around and everyone is agreeable and it feels like one of those Hollywood movies where, you know, there's music in the background and everybody smiles, everyone's nice to each other, you're living in a fake world. The only way you know for sure you're living in the real world is when nasty, rude, offensive, and horrible people can come up to you and ruin your day. That's how you know you're actually in a free country.
But I would agree. I would agree to an extent to that. My view would be in the sense of, yeah, you're not truly liberating people when you don't allow them to say what is contradictory to your right. belief or your stance, because you really do need people to say no. Purple, that dress was black and, was it black and blue, right? Not green and, was it not gold and white?
It was both. It was both, depending on your eyesight.
Right.
But don't you think part of the problem is that most people aren't really interested in hearing what somebody else has to say. It's more important for them to get their point across and to try and prove you wrong.
So true.
That is true. And I think that stems in the education at home, because never mind schools and everywhere else, we all learn the wrong thing here and there. At home, it's the parents that enforce this belief and this way of learning, as in, I need to exert my point of view first, and then whatever you say after that, I got mouths over my ears. I don't care anymore. And that's what I'm actually grateful for my parents, is that when they were teaching me, as they were giving me a hiding every time I did something wrong, they were just telling me, listen here, do you know why you did this? And then they'll speak to you like, you know, a civil human being. And then, yeah, whack, there's another one in the butt.
Yeah.
But the point is, I learned how to listen and also explain myself whenever something happened. And the culture that we have in today's society is say your piece and that's it. I don't care. Live your life.
And then you end up with that platitude of, well, you have your opinion and I have mine. You're entitled to your opinion. And then that's the worst place to leave a conversation.
Oh, we agree to disagree. The worst phrase of all time.
Yeah, because
I hate that.
Yeah, oh, it just means that Nobody's made any progress.
Because what I hate about it is I'm an absolute kind of a person where, yes, we may agree to disagree, but in the end of the day, there will be an opinion that is more truth to the other as far as I'm concerned. And that's where you need to have a conclusion on, is in, okay, we do agree to disagree that the dress was black and blue, but at the end of the day, what does the designer say?
Yeah, and also that if you say that I agree to disagree, what you're really saying is that you're impervious to reason. Like, there's no way that a better argument can come in and change your mind. Your opinion is like sacred.
And that's the problem.
And that's a bad position to find yourself in. And the problem with a lot of people who want to shut down other people's opinions and arguments just because they find them offensive is that they're also impervious to reason. What they're really saying is, I don't want to hear anything that's going to upset my worldview, even if it's right.
And that's and unfortunately that's the society. But it all starts with each and every one of us, from you, Garrett, to me, to anybody else, and all the listeners that are listening today, is that we need to take a retrospective look and say, how many times have I done this?
Right.
And we need to start applying it, obviously, personally with our kids, because I believe the kids are the one that inherit everything, and then they continue that generation after generation. So you need to teach your children the correct way of logically thinking and accepting things that, look, this is what logically it breaks down to, and we need to basically take it from there.
At least your story had a happy ending for your friend, because he did get laid.
And you know what? Here I am defending my friend, and my friend is the most, you know, he's homophobic, but I could say the guy, but he got laid still with the social justice world, which shows that the irony in this world. I don't get it. I really don't get it.
Well, I mean, the two can be completely separate. You don't have to like the person that you have sex with. I mean, if you're in the mood for sex in that moment, you could easily have sex.
But why does it not happen to me? That's the sad part.
Oh, you need to up your game.
All right, dude.
Really, thanks. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Mobile, with another interesting point of view. I just love the fact that we can have these conversations here. All right, listen. It's almost time for news. I found a funny clip the other day. It's probably old. I don't know how long this has been floating around, but I thought it would entertain you a little bit. This is a debate that was going on I can't remember even what channel it is, but I got to play you this clip because it made me laugh when I listened to it. And it's these. They're talking about how men are much happier than women.
Well, obviously.
You think?
Yes.
But hang on, here's the difference. It's not for your whole life. At a certain age, men are happier than women. At another age, women turn that whole thing around and they become happier than men.
Because basically what they're saying is that we are happier in our early adult life and that women are more likely than men to fulfill their aspirations earlier related to material goods and family. That is true, wouldn't you say, Tracy? And a good thing. It takes men longer to figure out what they want to do in life.
Well, I just think this whole notion of basing your happiness on material goods is part of the problem, hence part of the reason that this thing was run by men in the first place. If there were women on the panel...
Tracy.
If there were women on the panel, they would... I mean, ask any woman if she would choose her car over her children, and she'd take the kids any day, whereas I would question a lot of men out there, quite frankly.
Tracy, I can't believe what I just heard
you say. There's a reason that women live longer, Mark. Let me tell you. It is because we are stronger and we are happier at the end of the day than most men. And that is factual, and you know it.
When men are married to women who scream like you, they just want to die sooner.
Oh, Mark.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's a good one.
And that when it happens in live TV, it just makes me... Because you know how quick you have to be and how like comfortable you have to be behind the camera. To actually say something, because you know you're going to get a huge reaction out of that, and it's going to be online forever. Isn't that the great thing about being alive in 2017, is that everything you say and do is going to be online forever? All right, let's get into some news. It is 6:30. I can't believe how quickly the time is going this morning. So, without further ado, the news brought to you by Colcacchio Pizzeria. I told you yesterday about the celebrity chef series that they've got going on. They've got a new summer menu. And they've also got a loyalty program, which we've talked about a little bit, relaunched in April of last year. Their loyalty program is there to communicate all the rewards to you, the customer, on frequency. So the more you visit, the more you earn. And because you earn, you can also give those slices away. So what you could do is add a gift coupon for a friend, colleague, or family member, the perfect lastminute.com gift if you're running late, need to say sorry, or just because you're feeling really generous. You can download the app. It's available for download in the app stores. Or for those who don't want to download the app but still want the rewards, just register on www.colcacchiorewards.co.za. What do you got for us today, Mubs? There's so many things to talk about.
Well, the IEC, also known as the Independent Electoral Commission, as well as the DI. They say that they've agreed the party will now lodge a formal complaint against the ANC. This is amid claims that the ANC was running that now famous war room, which tried to send out fake tweets as well as retweets and also created a false EFF poster. The commission and the DA met yesterday after other claims surfaced that IEC Deputy Chair Terry Tselane was being intimidated by the ANC. Ooh. The ANC has, of course, denied that they were involved in the war room and said the general manager, Ignatius Jacobs, had to explain to Secretary General Gwede Mantashe what exactly happened, because nobody else knows.
Of course, none of them knew what was going on. It was all over social media, but none of them knew.
The IEC say that they've given the DA an undertaking that it will report the party's concerns to a full meeting of its commission and that it will deliberate on the issue. So the DA now formally going to lodge a formal complaint against the ANC.
Well, this is what Justice Malala was saying should happen.
Yeah.
Is we can't just leave it now. It's got to be followed up. Some people must be charged because this is the kind of fake news that is making it very difficult for us to establish fact. And even though the ANC claim that they don't know anything about this, of course they knew about it. If there was a $50 million expenditure that took place here from ANC coffers, you're telling me that Gwede Mantashe didn't know? Don't know about the $50 million. Please. Of course he knew.
Fuck you!
Oh, exactly. There we go. Well, that was Ignatius Jacobs, by the way.
We'll get into further details as to why exactly Gerinel has decided that he's going private and why he's decided to join AfriForum. We've got bits of that press briefing that he gave yesterday.
You want to hear it?
Oh, okay, fine.
No, if you like.
No, I mean, I thought we were going to do it after 7, but okay.
Then we'll do it after 7.
All right.
Let people look forward to that.
Shockingly
inappropriate.
Well, this next story is shockingly inappropriate. Allegations of drug abuse have surfaced around a man who is accused of murdering his girlfriend and burying her in his parents' backyard in Paarl. Because, you know, there has to be at least one story a year of a spouse suffering death at the hands of the other half.
What is up with these people who... What is wrong with people that kill each other and bury each other in the back garden? Really?
Jaco Oosthuizen, 32 years old, is suspected of killing his 28-year-old girlfriend, who was a psychologist's assistant, Nicola Pinar. Reportedly, he had a history of using tick, mandrax, and dacha. A former pizza delivery colleague of Oosthuizen described him as withdrawn and quiet. Pinar's body was found under rubble in the backyard of the house where Oosthuizen lived with his mother and father. Her body was found 25 days after she was reported missing by her mother. She is believed to have been strangled, and a pathologist report said that she was also 6 months pregnant. Now, police arrested Oosthuizen in Port Elizabeth, where he reportedly wanted to meet with his ex-girlfriend, but the ex-girlfriend has since said that she does not want to comment or be drawn into what she has called a tragic situation.
This is really tragic. So he just thought he'd get away with burying her in the back garden.
In his parents' back garden.
Yes. Some proper loonies out there. Dangerous, crazy people who are trying to kill you.
You know, and they walk among you every day. Every day.
Well, they're not just strangers either. This is what I keep telling everybody, is that actually these people are your most close and trusted partners, usually, right? It's usually boyfriend and girlfriend, or husband and wife, and
uncle.
Yes, sis. I mean, the people that you trust, they're the ones who try to kill you. People talk about crime. They say, oh my God, the crime rate is just out of control. How many times have you been in that conversation? And then that you find out that a lot of these crimes, by far, the vast majority, according to the police now, not Gareth Cliff, according to the police, most of our violence in this country is domestic violence, which somehow is like a sanitized kind of, you know, when they say domestic violence, you go, oh, is that all? When you hear about violence in the streets, you're like, oh, but domestic violence gets a free pass. And when you hear about rape and things like that, it's happening in families, man.
Mm. Every day.
Yeah, we're not talking about complete strangers walking down the street and they pass by your house and go, let's go in there and kill her. We're talking about the people you trust. Yes. Unbelievable. And this is a new story. This isn't even an old one. We've got, let's just go through it. There's that one Paniyatu.
Jade
Paniyatu. That's still happening in PE. We've got that Henry van Breda one. We've got... Hadi Biespoort, she was on the board of the SABC. Hope Zinde.
Yes, her son is accused of murdering her.
These are all, we're still waiting for clarity on all of these. These are family and lover and I mean, I'm not even halfway through the list. these situations. These are not the exceptions to the rule. These are the rule. The exceptions to the rule are the opportunist criminals. Think about that for a little while. Should make you a little uncomfortable. At least you need to do a background check on the person you sleep with. All right? Is that a fair thing to say?
I totally agree.
You really need to. You need to run a background check.
And you know what you can do? You can call it modern day romance. Let's just give it a title, because if you package anything nowadays appropriately, you can sell anything. Do background checks.
Right.
Maybe that's what we should do. We should have a side agency here. We've got the internet.
Mm.
We've got Doc Thoughts.
Well, here's a business opportunity for anybody.
Let's do it. Oh. What does that room over there actually have in it? Nothing. Let's open up a little.
Oh, you want to use that little room?
And put a phone line in there. Get a big screen.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Should we get into some sport?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Ben, what do you got for us in the sport? Let's give you your famous intro. It's becoming a thing. People like it. They've been asking for it on emails, so can't leave it out.
Well, interesting night of English Premier League action. Arsenal, as they would do, they absolutely thrashed Southampton 5-0 recently. They've been playing bloody well. So what do? They go out on a Tuesday night against some lowly team called Watford, and they concede 2 goals before your tea even cools down. So they lost that one 2-1. So Arsenal fans are obviously irate about this. Now there's more fresh cries of, oh, Arsenal's never going to do anything for us, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, it's the same old story. It's just I'm fascinated by how you never understand how tomorrow becomes tomorrow and a month can end.
Oh, stop it. It's something people talk about.
Arsenal fans can never understand that ultimately this is how it always goes. You're going to finish fourth. It's going to happen. It's written in stone. So that's 2-1. Arsenal lose. A prime chance to extend their position at second and actually put some pressure on Chelsea. But no, obviously not going to happen. Leicester, well, that's just going from bad to worse. They got Mahrez back from AFCON. But they lost 1-0 to Burnley last night, which means Leicester are on the same points as Swansea. Swansea, who were previously shite, are now actually kind of fighting away from the relegation zone. How about that? Leicester, though, well, they're suddenly in some very murky territory. Sunderland, they held Spurs to a 0-0 draw, and the big game from last night was Liverpool versus Chelsea. As you know, Liverpool have had a terrible month. Absolutely shocking month where they've lost pretty much everything. So they went to, hopefully to actually salvage something against Chelsea. They saved a penalty late in the game and managed to hold on for a 1-1 draw. Which is kind of nice, stop the bleeding. But I don't know if that's going to really help them out too much. So tonight's matches, we see West Ham hosting Man City, a bit 9:45 SA time. Then Man United take on bottom of the table Hull City. Now, Hull really are just in the doldrums. That's 10 o'clock.
And well, Hull's very close to hell, isn't it?
Yeah, and Stoke versus Everton. So a quick look at the log. So all of these teams have played 23 games. Chelsea on top, 56 points. Then Spurs on 47. Then Arsenal on 47 with the inferior goal difference. Then Liverpool on 46. Then the Manchester clubs have played 22. Man City on 43, Man United on 41. So that's your top six. Ultimately, Chelsea are going to win. So we'll just keep padding from here until the end of the season about this Premier League. But Chelsea kind of, yeah.
Jeez, Ben, you're so optimistic.
No one's going to chase them down.
Okay.
Because let's be honest, Spurs are going to do the ridiculous thing of – Spurs are like the Proteas, right? They fill you with hope and eventually they just go at the end. Arsenal are Arsenal. Liverpool – They're a disaster. And Pep Guardiola is basically saying, well, we're not going to win either. And Man City are 13 points back, Gareth. 13 points back, that's a bloody long way. And as for Man United, they are 15 points back.
All right.
Yeah, this doesn't take a rocket science.
I got you. Sometimes you help it. You save us some time.
Yeah. So, other football news tonight. Semi-final action. Burkina Faso versus Egypt. Now, Burkina Faso have, I don't think they've ever beaten Egypt in this tournament. Burkina Faso made the finals last time round in the tournament when it was played in SA.
All right.
So they will be taking on the Pharaohs. You know, I always find funny on TV is that people do whatever they can to give, like, football teams nicknames. So they'll give them, like, 12 names by the end of the broadcast. And you're going, who the hell are they talking about? You get, like, the Atlas Tigers or this all these stupid names. But let's keep it simple here. Burkina Faso versus Egypt. 9 o'clock tonight. And then tomorrow, Cameroon versus Ghana. Can't mess around there. Semifinals at AFCON 2017. What a joyous time. Right, there's also huge amounts of golf this weekend, right? We've got the Dubai Desert Classic. Now, this is an incredible event because it's been going since, well, Dubai literally was just a desert and a golf course.
All right.
So, like, mid to late 90s. And it's got the best of the European Tour, plus Tiger's playing there because, let's be honest, they liked giving him lots of money in that part of the world. Then we've got the Waste Management Phoenix Open.
Yeah.
All of these start Thursday, of course. Dubai Desert Classic will start from 6 a.m. SA time. And then the Waste Management Phoenix Open, where you will not find any waste at the end of the week, Gareth.
I'm so happy about
that. Process and recycle everything.
Wouldn't it be a terrible thing if the Waste Management Open was left in a mess?
It's an incredible tournament. We've spoken about the crowds and the stadium seating and the fact that it's just like a carnival atmosphere all day everywhere.
Right.
But they process all the waste. They manage all the waste at this place.
So,
if they have a million beer cups, they will be processed and recycled by Monday.
Has nobody ever, you know, maybe suggested that they change the name of the tournament?
Mumps, they're managing waste. That's what they do. They're not petting children. They manage waste.
I can't take it seriously when it's called that.
It's like Coca-Cola. They're not going to suddenly say fizzy beverage open. It's what they do, Coca-Cola.
How dare you? It's the Waste Management Open. They manage waste. Like Ben says, I mean, how much clearer do you want it to be?
Incredible tournament, that.
Outrageous.
In cricket, the Proteas are back in action tonight here on Wednesday. So they'll take on Sri Lanka in Durban. Now, the last time the Proteas played in Durban, it was a high-scoring run fest. I think they chased down 370-odd against Australia. I highly doubt it'll be as high-scoring this time around. The spinners will probably come into it. Durban's a funny pitch like that. It can be a high scorer or it can just suddenly be a spinning dust ball. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But I would say that SA are going to win this one, and that's not even being confident. It's just that Sri Lanka, without Angelo Matthews, there's no real backbone to this team. And if Dick Weller doesn't get going at the top of the order, well, then they're in a spot of bother. So they'll be today, day-night match from 1:30. And then, of course, the Pink ODI in Johannesburg, also 1:30 on Saturday. If you haven't got tickets for that yet, try. Just try get there. It's going to be incredible. Today also sees the decider between India and England in a T20 match. The second one was, well, it was ruined by an umpire just being dodgy. Joe Root hammered the ball into his pads with his bat, and the umpire was like, yeah, fair enough, let's give him out. I want to go home. So they'll be the decider, which has been a long tour for England where they've been dicked into the test matches and the ODIs. So here's their chance to get something back. And tomorrow we'll see New Zealand and Australia locking horns again at a rugby ground playing cricket. That's pretty much it for your sport for today. There's the Sydney Sevens as well to look forward to this weekend, but more on that tomorrow.
All right, let's speak to Anthea Gardner. There's plenty that she wants to talk about this morning in the Money Shot. Anthea, good morning.
Good morning, Gareth.
All right. Bit of a dull end to the month, huh, on the JSE?
Yeah, pretty much. Our market, I mean, we did end in the green about 0.15%, somewhere around there.
Even worth the effort.
Exactly. But for the month, we are up 3.5%. So it's a good start to the year, I guess. But there weren't many companies reporting yesterday either. So it just felt a bit kind of really. And also, we've got quite a few central banks reporting meetings happening this week. And in fact, US Fed today, Bank of Japan, Bank of England. And so I think markets are kind of just sitting back waiting.
Okay.
And also global markets, really, this Trump situation, I think people are actually just really nervous because they don't know what he's going to do next. Yesterday, one of his advisors said that Germany is using a grossly overvalued currency to gain economic advantage, of course, Germany has the euro.
Yeah.
And the euro is, I'm not sure it's grossly undervalued. I think there are a lot of problems still in Europe that they haven't fixed. You know, there's Italy, Spain, Greece still hanging in there. So I'm not sure that's true. So I don't know why they keep making statements like this. But I tell you what, if it's a weaker US dollar they want, they're certainly getting it. Because yesterday, again, the dollar kind of came under pressure. And in fact, Germany yesterday reported their lowest ever unemployment rate at 5.9%. And maybe that's why he said it.
Yeah, I don't know whether this is like you're cutting off your nose to spite your face in the long run, because I suppose that you want to have good relations with America. And if he's going to go all protectionist on Europe, it's going to hit them just as hard as it will the US dollar.
Sure, absolutely, yes.
I mean, because they're not going to be able to sell as much stuff to the US. And if they do, it's going to cost them more and the US less.
And just on the on that subject, the U.S. does still import a lot of goods and services and oil. And so the weaker dollar is not going to help them particularly. So for all his protectionist policies, that could backfire a little bit when it comes to the consumer and inflation.
Yeah, I don't think that anybody wants to see protectionism come back. I think it would be a very, very bad thing for all of us, right?
I think so, too.
In any part of the world. I mean, if our government started becoming all protectionist, the only people who would be pleased are local exporters.
And it is a tough one, because we did this with the clothing industry a couple of years ago. Actually, it's probably a couple of decades ago by now. But so we want to protect the jobs in the industry, and we're talking about doing it in the chicken sector at the moment. But actually, is it what we really want? Like, I understand we want jobs at home and people at home to be employed. But overall, does it work? It's such a difficult one.
Not in a world where you can order things online and where everybody is you know, able to communicate with each other across borders. And borders have ceased to become the important thing they once were until someone like Trump gets in. I don't know. I don't know if we're moving forward or backward on this thing, but it's something we've got to watch.
Indeed. And then just kind of on the local market again, commodities had a bit of a rally. Golds were up. Financials caught a nice bid again yesterday. I mean, considering that we've had a couple of down days in the banking and and insurance shares. Volumes very muted, really nothing there. Steinhoff under pressure again yesterday, you know, because of this cancelled contract with Sealy. And Sealy makes up 25% of Mattress Firm in the US's sales. But I think what they're doing, so I think what people are worried about is that they will lose out because they no longer have this, they're no longer selling the Sealy brand. I'm not sure how brand loyal bed purchasers are. And also, Steinhoff also owns a company called CAP, K-A-P, which makes Restonic, which I think they're just going to use and to put into the Mattress Firm, you know, kind of replace it, really, with replace Sealy. So really, what I'm saying is they're going to bring their brand in-house. You know, it's more of a vertical integration across their brands, that's all.
Well,
but Steinhoff under pressure, yeah.
Have you ever bought a bed and been particularly brand loyal?
I was thinking about that yesterday. No, never. I've never thought. So I mentioned Sealy Posturepedic yesterday because I remember it as a child.
Yeah.
And it was.
We all knew those ads, right? But it didn't. Yes. It didn't like make you want to go out and immediately buy a new bed.
And when I did buy a bed, I didn't go, I absolutely need that one. No, so right. Very odd.
Spot on. African Bank.
Yeah, so they're relisting today. And Ben asked me this on Monday, and I said, no, they're far from relisting. But I actually completely forgot about it. So if you were an African Bank shareholder, today you will own shares in a company called African Phoenix Investments. And I'm not making excuses, but the reason I forgot is because there's no prospectus. There's no new offering of a share. I don't think it even has a banking license. So this new company, African Phoenix Investments, it's called. It will own Stangen, the insurance company, Ellerines, the furniture business, and RDS, which is Residual Debt Services. So you know how everything was kind of split up into good and bad bank, and all the parts were broken up. In fact, if you were a shareholder in African Bank, you get one for one on this new African Phoenix Investments, which basically is just a cash shell. But if you were preference shareholders, I don't think you get any benefit because it doesn't have a bank. It doesn't actually operate as a bank. So if you were before, if you were a preference shareholder, you would get your dividend before anybody else. That's the benefit of being a pref shareholder. In this structure, it doesn't work that way. So I'm not sure what's going to happen to the pref shareholders. Do they just become ordinary shareholders like everybody else? It seems a bit unfair, in my opinion. But yes, you're right. African Bank, in inverted commas, relisting today as African Phoenix Investments, really rising up from the ashes. I mean, they chose that name well, didn't they?
Sure. All right, and then just finally, Apple reported last night.
Okay. An incredible set of results. Their highest ever quarterly revenue, thanks to the iPhone 7. So it looks like lots of people got iPhone 7s for Christmas last year. Net sales of $78.4 billion for the quarter, which is $1 billion more than the market was expecting. So, of course, the share is going to have a nice little run today because they reported after market closed yesterday. They sold more than 78 million iPhones in the quarter.
Wow.
It's quite something, right? So the new iPhone 7 wasn't as much of a disappointment to everyone else as it was maybe to us. I wasn't excited about it.
I'm just going wow because we know how much one of those phones cost.
Mm-hmm.
Holy mother of God, they must be making a lot of money.
Well, in the quarter, $78 billion. There you go. That's a lot of money.
What could $78 billion do for South Africa's economy?
Oh wow! You could probably buy an entire bank. You could probably buy more than one of the banks in South Africa for that much money.
That's unbelievable. All right, thank you.
My pleasure.
Anthea,
speak
Gardner.
To you tomorrow.
Thanks, Anthea. Anthea with the money shot. $78 billion.
I cannot.
In the quarter, not the year.
Yep.
It's a good company, huh? What are you inventing?
Nothing.
I'm sitting in your hands doing.
I'm useless.
Well, I want to invent that whole private eye investigation thing.
Go ahead, Ben.
I'm trying, Gareth. I'm trying.
I know. I admire your resolve. Okay, everybody. When we come back in a little while, we'll have some news. I've actually got quite an interesting bunch of things happening this morning. Let me give you an idea of what's going on today. Because we've got Debbie Droke, who you remember we spoke to last week about the Women's March.
Have you checked on her medically?
No, she's
after
fine.
This last week?
She's fine.
Heart rate?
She's fine. The twin chefs will be popping in a little bit later on. And Clive van der Berg, who's an artist and a museum designer. This guy is amazing. He's just done an exhibition at the Goodman Gallery that I want to talk to him about because his work is to do with, you know, the way that gay people get pushed off of buildings in certain Muslim countries.
Mm.
No, he's done a startling array of sculpture and painting that has largely to do with this. So I think it's going to be interesting to talk to him. Plus, he's designed a number of really, really impressive galleries and museums around South Africa. So a very successful and accomplished artist. And you know what, Mubs? We never really get to talk to the artists. We often talk to singers and actors and politicians and thought leaders. But the artists are very often the ones who drive civilization forward. So if we're going to do it, then let it be today. That's Clive van der Berg, who will be joining us a little bit later on. Hope you're off to a good start for the morning. I hope that you are ready to tackle the 1st of February and the whole month of February, because it has just begun, and we're going to need you on your best behavior. We're going to need you doing the most you can to be a useful, productive individual. CliffCentral.com.